It's time for It Ought to Be Law Tuesday as State Senator Dan Gutowski joins us to take your law suggestions. And one of our favorite guests, Adam Selzer, stops by to chat about his new book. All that and more right now on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
Let's get to it. I think a lot of people watched the State of the Union address. Did a lot of people? By a lot, I mean everybody did, right? Everyone watched? Everyone watched the State of the Union? Did you? I did not.
I saw it, yeah.
Did you see it?
Yeah.
Jill, did you get a chance to...
I was busy doing traffic things.
Yes, that's okay. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. You can call or text us, and we'd love to hear about what you thought in regards to the State of the Union. And not to get in an argument, just I want to hear what you thought, whether you support President Obama or you kind of just thought, well, that's just bull hockey. That's what they say, right? Instead of the other word, bull hockey.
So, yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah.
Bull hockey.
And I'm just curious, not a place to have an argument, no yelling. Just I want to have a conversation about the State of the Union. Oh, tell me what your state of your house is like. This morning, Steve Cochran had a State of the Show address, and it sounded like things were going very well. They addressed the
good
things. Yeah. So if we want to know how are you doing? Are you doing better or worse than you were a couple years ago, 5 years ago, 6 years ago? Because I was broke before the recession, before everything went into the crapper. Oh, I almost said something else there too.
You almost said bull hockey?
I almost said bull hockey.
Cool.
We were, and I wouldn't say we were badly off. My husband actually had a full-time job in 2008, right before the whole crash. And that was still during President Bush's administration. In July of 2008, my husband came home to tell me that they had let him go. And my husband has not worked since. But I was not working full-time. So we always kind of had a single-family full-time income. But we never really had a lot of debts. We don't own our property. We live with my mom, and that was the case before. We had planned to live with my mom and be able to split the cost that way. When my son was born with medical issues, my younger son Declan has a neurological disorder. Things were just a lot more complicated with finances, and we had to make everything stretch. You know, we don't buy new cars. We don't travel very much. We did, but the thing is, we didn't really before the recession. So everything has kind of been a little bit even keel for us. I've always made sure that I tuck away money whenever I can. I've learned to make do in different ways. So that's my state of the house. I love that gas prices have gone down. I think that that's been a good thing. I don't, when they say that unemployment rates reflect also people who've given up, we actually count in that number. My husband did give up looking for a job because we decided it would be more expensive for us to hire medical caretakers for Declan, that it would be better to have my husband be the primary caregiver in the home to be available for our sons. We don't hire. We used to hire someone to come clean the house. I miss that because Steve has a very high tolerance for clutter. And I knew that when I married him, and I've learned to lower my expectations. When I come home and we turn on the lights and nothing scurries into the corner, I consider that to be a big win.
That's a win, yeah.
It's a win. He doesn't want anyone to come clean the house either. And here's why. Because he feels he would then have to clean the house for the person coming to clean the house. So I said, why don't we pretend like someone's coming to clean the house, and then we clean the house for that imaginary person that you're worried about. So I'm getting off topic.
You should just constantly tell them that guests are coming over.
Guests are coming over.
Right.
We better clean
tomorrow.
This place
there's a
up.
Whole bunch of people.
Lots
throwing
of
a party.
People. But that's not. We've never been very good at. We're not like hoarders or anything like that. Mm. But there's a lot of cleaning that has to go on before we will allow anyone to come into our home. So that was before and during and now this part of the recession.
Right.
So that's
that was your pre-recession.
Pre-recession.
And your post-recession.
It has maintained.
Got
yes,
it.
The level of cleanliness. I think that should. I wonder what kind of. That must be a barometer for some people.
Well Obama did mention in the. In the State of the Union today about child care, about helping families afford child care and certain things that he thinks. I mean, it's interesting. All the things that he said seem to be great. I don't know if I'm listening with the right ear. But all the things he said, you know, lowering taxes, doing this, they all sound great. But I don't know how feasible any of the things he said are.
Well, which one do you want? Do you want, because I have, ABC News does a quick fact check. So 312-981-7200. We would love to hear from you and see what you thought.
I mean, free education, you know, lower gas prices that stay. Mm-hmm. All the things that he said that seem like positives sound good. And, you know, encouraging Congress to pass laws that make some of those things realities also sound great. But I don't know what the likelihood of any of that is.
Well, isn't that what every State of the Union, you kind of go, what's
right,
the likely? So we do the fact check the day of.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like right now, ABC News came out with their fact check.
Mm-hmm.
Could I have the fact check on 2000, like
2010? Right, yeah, like what happened after that one?
I think some State of the Unions are like, should be, hey, remember what I said last time? Here's where we are.
Yeah,
compared.
These are the things that didn't change that I said I was going to change.
Yeah.
I think that's why people are so jaded with politicians in general, because we put these people in office who say all these things,
mm-hmm.
and almost none of them happen. Like, I don't know how many of the things that he discussed tonight will actually become laws, and I don't. State Senator Dan Kutowski might be able to tell us what he can put into law.
I don't know. Maybe we can get him to call earlier.
Yeah, let's try.
He hasn't responded to any of my texts. Maybe he's going over the transcripts as well. Well, one of the education, right? What you just talked about. What he said was, today our younger students have earned the highest math and reading scores on record. Our high school graduation rate has hit an all-time high, and more Americans finish college than ever before, according to ABC News. That is mostly true. According to the most recent reports by the National Center for Education Statistics, 81% of Americans graduated from high school in 2013, the highest number in history. However, according to the 2012 National Report Card, which reports on trends in academic progress, American students' test scores have been relatively consistent for the past 40 years. So that's all of our administrations.
Yeah, that doesn't sound good.
That doesn't sound good.
That part didn't sound good.
What other part? So job creation, right, which we were just talking about, those who claim to be
unemployed. So he claimed that and I think this one is true. I think that's what you're going to find there, that we created the most jobs in the last few decades. This is a very significant year in job creation, 2014 was.
He said since 2010, America has put more people back to work than Europe, Japan, and all advanced economies combined. Our manufacturers have added almost 800,000 new jobs. He doesn't say it that way. New jobs. I don't know if he used that inflection. New jobs. Some of our bedrock sectors, like our auto industry, are booming, but there are also millions of Americans who work in jobs that didn't even exist 10 or 20 years ago. Well, that's going to be true regardless, because we didn't have all these things with our apps and things going on, all the computers and technology. Let's see. That didn't even exist at companies like Google and eBay and Tesla. So according to ABC, as to whether or not the validity of that statement is those statements are true, they say it's complicated. U.S. manufacturing has bounced back since the recession, but the hundreds of thousands of jobs created since 2010 are still dwarfed by the roughly 2 million manufacturing jobs lost in America between December 2007 and June 2009, and that by the larger overall decline in manufacturing since its peak in 1979, there were 19 million Americans who worked in manufacturing. And Detroit may be on the rise since the administration bailed out the auto industry, but American auto manufacturing is still, obviously, we all know, it's a far cry from where it was back in the heyday. And then additionally, technology is driving job creation in new industries, but many more Americans are working now in jobs that are centered in fast food, hospitality, and other low-paying service industries. Are there people making a lot of money at Google Tesla and Facebook? There are a lot of people making less money in industry where they rely whether on tips or minimum wage jobs.
Right. Yeah. And that's where the big push also came up in this speech to talk about minimum wage and raising the minimum wage nationwide so that mm-hmm. everyone gets, you know, a much more livable amount of money. And again, that sounds great as an idea. That obviously sounds beneficial, but I'm not sure that, you know, the politicians that are in the places they're in are going to help him pass something like that.
Right.
It seems like all the things he said tonight didn't really stretch across the aisle. And so maybe he's going to be stuck.
That does seem to be the reaction to the.
Right.
And you said something interesting, because you said it sounded, because I did not hear it. I am only reading it and also reading it. I'm reading the transcript and I'm reading the fact checking by ABC News.
Yep.
And what you said was that it all sounded good to you. And it's interesting. I've always been fascinated by this. And it's, you know, of course, I do what I do for a living. I speak, mm-hmm. and there are people out there listening. And some people will send us messages on how much they love this show and they listen to us every night. And we hug you and love you.
we do, yes.
Yeah, we'll send in any gifts. Virtual way we can. Right. I'm opening my arms to ABC, to our cameras in studio, WGNRadio.com. There are also people who listen to this show and my voice is like nails on a blackboard.
Yeah, they hear the opposite.
They hear the complete, everything I say is horrible and stupid and annoying. And I also open my arms to you and give you a virtual hug as well.
As long as you keep listening, yeah, great.
But I don't, so, but the mechanism of the ear we all have is the same, right? The function of it operates basically for most of us on the same way. Like, again, I go back to my son Declan, whose brain is wired differently. He does not. Mm-hmm. He has intermittent hearing. So maybe some people have that. And that's why they get angry. But he has, you know, it gets short-wired. But for the most part, we have, you know, even if you have the same education, there are people who just hear everything completely differently.
Yeah.
And almost violently so when they try to have a conversation. Sometimes, have you ever been in a conversation with somebody and realize that you're agreeing with each other, but you've locked into not agreeing with each other, that you're just...
Yeah, at some point, you don't understand what you're actually arguing about, but you're still... Definitely arguing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. The
yeah, it's very confusing when that happens.
Yes. The consumption of information and what we do with it and how we react to it is incredible to me. The vast differences we all have. Because I can listen to one person and I just hear them differently. It comes from your experiences, what your belief system is, what your morals are. And I would say, you know, every presidential address, I wish that we could all come to it fresh with a fresh slate and just go, let me see what this guy has. And I don't know if we're capable. Is anybody capable of that? Of just going, let's see what, not this guy, but the president of the United States.
I don't know. I mean, the reason why I thought tonight's was so abundantly positive was predominantly because the way it started was highlighting a lot of the things that are true that have gotten a lot better in the last few years, mm-hmm. like us being out of Afghanistan and being out of Iraq predominantly. A lot of the things he said in the first 30 seconds were high points for his administration for things that they've done. Even a lot more people being insured. We don't have a lot of uninsured Americans anymore, mm-hmm. compared to what we used to have. That's true. Whether or not you agree with Obamacare or how that happened, that's a fact. So I'm sitting there seeing the first 30 seconds and thinking about like a movie trailer. Like, this sounds great. All the things they're saying right now sound really good.
And then the people who hear it differently are like, well, this is just a movie trailer.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
You know, so they actually do have the same reaction.
They then
but they're like,
doubt.
This is not right. what I want from my... So it is... Yeah, so even like that first, you can look at it both ways. That's right. Why I wanted to see what people thought at 312-981-7200. Mm-hmm. We'll have this conversation a little more after this. I didn't hear the. I was working. I had other things to do. I was other places.
Ooh, yeah. What is that? What is that? I don't like that.
We're listening pretty late, and I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. We've been talking about the State of the Union address, and I was like, we know a politician. We should talk to a politician. Actually, what we were talking about before we had Senator Dan Katowski on the line was, Senator, how are you doing, first of all? Let me extend my greetings.
Thank you for extending your greetings and well wishes and your salutations.
I've been reading the State of the Union address, so I feel very like I need to be in sort of use more flowery language right now, a little more, you know, expressive.
I know. I've never felt you've ever been,
devoid of flowerness?
Flowery language, devoid is a better word. thank you for this share.
You're welcome. I also have trouble letting people finish their thoughts when I feel like they're, you know.
You know what, though? In that case, that was exactly the word I was looking for. I was going to say bereft. I was like, no, that's not right.
Ooh, bereft.
And
that's a good
devoid.
Word. Devoid. Absent. Yeah. Absent of.
Yes, I said absent, and absent means devoid in a way, but devoid is a better word. It just sounds better.
Well, whichever words we use, do you get the sense sometimes, and of course you do because you are a state senator, that when the words that are coming out of your mouth don't seem to be received the way you intend them? How frustrating that must be for a politician?
You know, words, as we all know, they matter.
Yes.
They matter in the context that you say them. But yes, it's, I mean, in any situation, how you intend them is often different from how people interpret them, and especially when they're in the public sphere,
right?
And when they're filtered through the media, which may be interpreting them a different way of reporting them and not giving full context. So, yeah, I remember I had a town hall meeting last year, and it was portrayed as something other than it was not.
Right.
And there was nothing I could do about it. And so, but, you know, even though the media reported it was something other than something that it was being misrepresented, there's a lot of things, there's a lot of difficulties out there, I think. I just think in being in the public eye, and particularly for the president, when he gets up there and he's speaking in front of the nation, there are people who have, they have pre-existing notions about what he's going to say.
Right.
And ideas. And even if things are going better than they had been in the past, it still doesn't matter. I mean, he's up against some difficult things, but I also think that, I think he's aware of that, but you know, it's important. I mean, in any situation, when some of the leader of the country gets up in our country, there's an opportunity to talk about what's going on with the State of the Union. I think, it's good.
Well, I was going to say, that's one of the reasons we're about to go to the 11:30 news, but I want to say one of the reasons we love having you on the show is we like giving listeners the opportunity to chime in. And that's why we have a segment with you called It Ought to Be a Law. And I want to remind our listeners that if you call 312-981-7200 or text us to the same number, we will take your law into consideration. And it doesn't have to be something incredibly serious, but if there is something that you really think should be changed, we have the senator on the line with us, and there have been laws that we have had effect on, and you can have a voice here, and not just with us, but with your senator, with your state representatives. Be heard. Tweet at them. Send them emails. But right now, we have open phone lines for you to give us a call and tell us what's on your mind and what you think ought to be a law. Senator, we'll talk to you in a few moments. And right. We're listening pretty late, and that music means that it is time for It Ought to Be a Law with State Senator Dan Katowski. You're listening pretty late, and Senator, you were telling me before we went to the news, actually on the phone, that you had you were working on some legislation based on or in response to a Facebook suggestion that you received. What is what's involved in that one?
Well, I received a message this week from someone that I've known a long time. Her name is Andrea, and her father died in a long-term care facility because they lost track of him, and he had Alzheimer's. And one of her recommendations was that he fell and he broke his neck, and one of the recommendations is that there would be a requirement for people who have Alzheimer's to wear an ID bracelet, notifying those who are out in the community that if someone's, wandering around, and oftentimes you see that, I think, with people who are living with dementia and Alzheimer's, they walk or they
elope. It's called elopement. It's actually, it's a term, and I know whenever I use the word elopement, people just look at me, and even in the education system, Declan is prone to elopement, and that means running off, and that's something that I think would also apply for children who are or adults, individuals who are nonverbal. Sounds like that would be really helpful for my family too.
Yeah, you don't want to be like. I think this is one of the perfect, as someone who lives with epilepsy and, brother who has diabetes, I think, this type of identification that makes people well aware of the fact that you're living with, a health a difficulty or health challenges. And especially in this case where, people may not have the level of awareness and cognitive abilities that they once did. So I thought it was a good idea. I thought it was an important one.
And that's something, again, that came from a suggestion on Facebook. And that's one of the, you know, abilities we have with our segment, It Ought to Be a Law, right here. And, you know, in this half hour, people have a chance to talk to you about what's important. Right now we have on the line with us, for example, Mark, who wanted to offer up a law. Hey, Mark, what is your law?
Hey, Patty. I love listening.
Thank you.
My law is that right now, I don't believe it is law. Currently, if you have expired or old or extra prescription drugs in your house, mm-hmm. the only way to dispose of is, like in my area, once a year, the police station has a disposal for them. And it's like one day for a few hours. And I thought it should be a law that pharmacies or pharmaceutical companies have to, you can be able to return those to them. So they're not sitting in your house. You know, I hear the commercials all the time now, you know, don't leave unused drugs and medications in your house. Well, what are you supposed to do with them? You know, you can't flush them down the toilet. You don't want to put them in a landfill either.
Right. So, you don't want to get in the water supply. I think I've heard that that can be a problem as well. If you just throw them away and they're in, you know, containers that will get into the soil or the water.
So the people that make them should be taking them back to properly dispose of them.
Interesting. I have all these. My mom will have like a whole like Ziploc bag filled with prescription bottles, you know, because there's that one day where she can take them. And I don't even know. I think I just hold on to stuff too. And you're not supposed to do that. Thank you, Mark. Well, I appreciate that law. Can you hold on?
Sure.
1 second. I think we all kind of have had that moment where we're like, what do I do with these now? What did I do there? Did I do that? Wait. Oh, I hung up on him. I'm so sorry. Do we have his information? I didn't mean to hang up because that would my win. Mark, call back. We've got Joe on the line. Hey, Joe, what's your law?
I thought this was an early disconnect. I hope I'm not wrong.
You're on the air. Yes. Mark will have to call back. I hope he'll do that. Yes. Go ahead.
Super. Listen, this regarding the controversy currently about American Sniper, if you will,
uh-huh.
and Michael Moore's, you know, remarks, if you want to call them remarks.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that every high school student, I wish you could expose it to them earlier, but I think it would be too traumatic.
Oh, I didn't do that. I did not do that. I didn't do that. I did not hang up on him. If you're watching on WGNRadio.com, my hands were on my pen and on my paper.
Yeah, I think he was saying something about how he thinks all high school students should see Pearl Harbor and Saving Private Ryan. Those are movies that should be mandated to get the experience of going to war.
Interesting. I think that listening to President Roosevelt's speech the day after we were attacked might be I don't know if watching fictionalized versions of what happened in history. I remember Senator. I'm not sure what your thoughts are on that because it's always going to be through the filter of fiction when you have a movie, unless it's a documentary, and even a documentary can have a slant to it. I think using real footage, at least for the parts of history that we have access to, that would be a better way to educate kids in high school and college. Don't you think?
Well, you know, I think sometimes when you have a good combination of people who've actually served in the military and experienced firsthand. Military conflict and the results of war,
mm-hmm.
And their meeting with students and talking to them and answering questions. You know, my son was while we were walking down the street and there's a guy there wearing a World War II hat, and they said World War II vet, and my son Cooper walked up to him and he's like, "Hey, Joe," and he's like, "Hey, how are you?" Apparently, Joe's been coming into the school and talking to the kids,
mm-hmm.
and volunteering. So I think it's a balance. I think as long as there's that education where it's, well, look, yeah, this did happen. I mean, if you talk to a friend of mine's father, was one of the people who stormed the beaches of Normandy, and I think Saving Private Ryan wasn't as totally far-fetched as some people they portray. So he looks at that as saying that, you know, that movie's a relatively accurate portrayal of what would happen. I mean, nothing can obviously replace the experience of being at war, but I think you need a balance of people, like firsthand experience, and then at least you have an opportunity to discuss, what actually happened, right, by doing it. So,
well, yeah. And to Joe's point, and again, Joe, we lost you, and we don't know how that happened. But I honestly did not hang up on you. My hands were on my paper. But I don't know if you've seen the film American Sniper. But what I've been doing is going and watching a lot of the interviews with Chris Kyle. Is it Chris Kyle? I don't want to get this name wrong. The man on which the movie is based, and his wife. There are interviews. There are several interviews you can watch if you don't have time right now to read the book and want to find out more about them. In addition to seeing the movie, this debate that's going on, this argument, and it's getting really ugly. Which I guess it's going to do when it comes to being talking about patriotism and honor and our men and women in uniform, and we do feel very strongly. So I think that if anything, the kind of absurd things that are being said on both sides are at least having a conversation. I don't know that we need to be ugly on either side of it. Calling snipers cowards and then calling Michael Moore, you know, someone who sweats Crisco. I don't really know how that moves the conversation along rather than listening to each other. I think that there's definitely something to be said about a man who served our military and saved lives. And I think more of the conversation is, why are we there and why do we need him to do that? You know, where does that come from? It's a better conversation. And I think the fictionalized story of Chris Kyle's life is something that we should, you know, that's he's an interesting, a fascinating guy. He was the most deadly sniper in American history. Did you have a chance to see it, Senator?
No, I haven't seen the movie, and I have not read the book either. But a friend of mine who recently completed it, it was one of the best books he's ever read.
I believe it. It sounds like a compelling story, and he's a compelling guy. You can go to YouTube and just type his name in, and you know, or type in American Sniper, and you can see there's a lot of just really quick 4 or 5 minute interviews with him, with his wife, with the writer of the screenplay. And I think that's another, you know, since we are all so quickly consuming information, a lot of people who are arguing about it haven't even seen the movie, which I find interesting. But hold on, let me wrap it up with Joe so that I can we have been talking about it, and that was Joe's point. Hey, Joe. So I hope that we've kind of addressed that. We didn't mean to lose you there.
You were actually getting right to the crux of the matter, Patty.
Yeah.
The point is, both of those movies depict the supreme sacrifice that Americans shed their own blood for a great purpose, an overall purpose, if you will. The sniper, and he's a small guy. He's one guy. But he did his part to save American lives. You go to Harry Truman. Look at what he had to face. Saying, well, gee whiz, do I send American troops and possibly lose 500,000 American troops invading Japan at the close of that World War? He made a decision. He dropped a bomb, which, you know, is debatable. But my God, he saved lots of lives. Otherwise, we might be speaking Japanese today. Or German.
You know what's another good movie is, because I love classic movies, Sergeant York is a really good movie with Gary Cooper, by the way, which is about is a movie about a sniper who was morally opposed to serving in the military. And that's a really good movie too, Joe. So if you had a chance, I don't know if you've seen it, but it's an excellent movie. Anyway, yes, I think that I think that there is something to be said. I don't know about, but okay. So your law, Joe, is to compel high school students and college students to watch movies that depict the supreme sacrifice that the men and women in military make.
Superbly put. And gee whiz, you know, look at the man on the street that Jay Leno used to run. It's amazing to me how much kids do not know our history. Mm-hmm. Now, these guys paid a tremendous price for a Michael Moore or anybody else to say what they want to say. It's called freedom of speech.
Right. And believe me, people are saying things right back at Michael Moore. Joe, hold on. We're going to take one more call before we go to a break. And we have thank you, Craig, for making sure I didn't hang up on anybody. He took care of that for me. Vince, what did you want to call about?
Hi, Patty. How are you?
I'm really good.
Tampa, Florida. I want to send you a little warm weather up there, hopefully. I listen to you every night. Thanks for keeping me up late. I love you.
Thank you, Vince.
I was watching Jimmy Kimmel while listening to your show at the same time. Yeah, I can multitask. Anyway, he was talking to a guy that is in Arrow. That show that you like so much, that Stephen Amell.
You can ask Craig. Craig, how would you describe what you saw in the studio as I looked up and was waiting?
It is hilarious that Vince is calling in because, yes, we're also watching it in studio, Vince, while we do our radio show.
Yeah.
And when he came on the show, Patty threw her arms in the air and said, ooh, come here.
I don't even know what this was.
And I came running into the studio assuming there's some sort of like national emergency on the television. And no, it's just, it's Stephen Amell.
It was Stephen Amell. Yes.
You go.
Thank you, Vince. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Great show. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. So not a law, but an important piece of information that Vince wanted to make sure I was alerted to. And we were all disappointed.
It might be able to be spun into a law where we say that everyone should acknowledge every time Stephen Amell is on TV and maybe mention to Patty when and where he'll be on television.
And Nathan Fillion and Stania Katic.
That could be a law to work in somewhere, right? State Senator Katowski?
You know what? It could be a law. It could be a resolution. You know, resolutions are one of these things. I actually talked about passing a law to end all resolutions, but resolutions are kind of oftentimes statements which don't necessarily have legal weight. So we can have a resolution that's, which supports Patty's current intrigue.
Yes. I like that intrigue.
That was answered so well by our politician guest.
It shall so be decreed.
Incredible.
I like that a lot. Actually, why don't we go out? Let's take Ben.
I'm a public servant, Craig. I'm a public servant.
He's a public servant. I like that. Let's go ahead and take Ben. We're not going to make Ben wait. He's been listening to all this fun. Hey, Ben, what's your law?
Hey, Patty. Thank you for taking my call. I've called you before. I love talking with you. But
thank you.
I'd like the senator to know, I don't know if you remember, but I've had a heart transplant. And I was saved by a heart transplant, and I really feel that this day and age, our license, when you apply for a license in the state of Illinois, it needs to default to transplant. I don't want to preach to anyone, but it's a fact that 24 people a day are still dying in need of a major organ transplant. And the fact that we don't have a system to get those organs to these people, because when you're young and you sign up for a driver's license and you don't really know what they're asking when they ask you about an organ transplant or if you're willing to do it. I think it should default to yes. And if you want to opt out for religious reasons or whatever, then you should tell them no.
I like that. So your donor law, can we condense that? What would be the condensed version of that?
That you have to actually opt out of being a donor as opposed to opting in.
I like that.
Yeah.
Compelled to opt out, not opt in.
We currently did that with, we had this, right, with people being able to, it's mandated that businesses would sign them up for a 401k plan, you know, a retirement plan that the state would administer. And, but they would, you know, people would, the recipients or the participants would pay for it. It wouldn't cost taxpayers any money, but it would just say that, you know, it would, because there's so many people who do not have the opportunity to get a retirement plan. And this would give them a chance to do this. And we do that with people's retirement in the state of Illinois. Why not do it for something that's as life-saving as this? I think that's an interesting idea.
I know that people are going to be against it because they're like, I don't want people to just have my body. But Ben, I like that one too. So far, so good. This has been a wonderful evening of It Ought to Be a Law so far. So 312-981-7200 before we close the docket. What do we do? How we close the floor? We suspend whatever it is. We'll find out. I'm sure the senator has.
Close debate.
Close the debate. We're closing the debate in just a few minutes. So 312-981-7200, call or text if you want in and possibly win a $25 gift card to Paisana's Pizza and Pasta after this on 720 WGN.
Ooh, yeah. What is that? What is that? I don't like that.
Let's get to this because we only have a couple minutes left and we have our texters. We've taken all of our calls and now we have a couple texts. Senator Dan Katowski is on the line with us and we're about to close the debate for It Ought to Be a Law on this date, Tuesday, January something. Go ahead.
From the 630, it should be a law that we teach kids how to read and write before promoting any kind of war lectures. So that's sort of a response to one of our other laws.
Okay. Yeah. From what area code?
That's the 630.
630. Mm-hmm. Read, write, then patriotism. Gotcha. Read. Gotcha.
Yep. From the 708, I'd like to see a law that within the credits of a movie that is based on a true story, there should be a notation of which parts are actually true and which parts are not true or made up for the embellishment of the movie.
That
would be a really
okay.
long credit
it would be,
if
right.
they have to really describe the scene,
oh,
maybe go back to them.
Go to every single scene.
Do a director's
scene.
Cut.
Well, Senator Katowski, it is our phone lines. We just lost the senator. I touched nothing.
Okay, yeah. So.
I touched nothing.
I'm sure he's thinking of the answer.
My hands
are
in the air.
He's just not on the phone line.
So I saw the interview with Chris Kyle's wife, and in the movie, apparently his wife is drinking shots, and then she gets so drunk that she throws up. So Chris Kyle's wife said that was pretty much true, except that she was drinking bourbon on the rocks, which Rob Martier, how cool is that? She's like, no, I'm pretty sure it was bourbon on the rocks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she said that she did, in fact, throw up, and he did have to hold her hair back. So that part was true. So if, I guess, and then so with the movie credits had to be she wasn't doing shots, she was doing bourbon on the rocks.
Yeah, they have to have a full diagram.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know what they say, a true patriot drinks bourbon on the rocks.
On the rocks. Senator Kotowski is back with us. I swear, Senator, if you go to our website, you can see that I had my hands in the, I did not hang up on
they
you.
They were in the 10 and 2 position
yes.
or something?
Yeah, it's good to know that you had your hands in
right. Yes. Yes. Do we have any other texters?
From the 815, I think it should be a law that drivers can't have pets on their laps when they're driving.
Oh, no pets in laps.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No pets in laps. Okay.
And then just from the 312, I really like the idea of a law where Patty gets to know where Stephen Amell is at all times.
Oh, I like that. the Stephen Amell law. The Stephen Amell alerts.
Yeah,
like
just
that.
Let you know where he is. That's taking it a step further, 312.
Well, because
that's
we
stalking.
Have Amber alerts. So I think right. that, you know, we have these very serious moments where something scary is happening. I think that, you know, a nice Stephen Amell alert will balance that out. More after this on 720 WGN. And here we go. We are going to take a vote on the laws that we have on the docket or whatever we want to call it. State Senator Dan Kotowski, and we have Craig is going to vote. Bill Cerrones, I'm not sure if you got to hear all of that, but you can just, you know, play along and just pick one. Rob Martier as well. We have Mark wanted more. He wants all pharmacies to be able to you have to
dispose
drop off
of medication. Old medication.
Not, I was going to say recycle. You don't right. want to recycle.
No, I don't
people's
think you want to recycle that.
Maybe the containers, but not the medication.
Right.
Disposal of pharmaceuticals. Joe would like to compel high school students and college students to see movies like Saving Private Ryan and Pearl Harbor. I'm not sure you want to go with the Ben Affleck movie, but anyway. Ben would like people to be compelled to opt out of the donor registration
right.
when you register for your driver's license. 630 would like to teach reading, writing, and then patriotism. Another texter would like us to have footnotes at the end of somewhat biographical movies to let us know what was real and what was not real. For example, an American Sniper,
right.
his wife was consuming bourbon on the rocks and not shots. And so maybe you want to know that at the end of the movie.
Detailed footnotes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Detailed. We also have a law that there should be no pets allowed in laps for drivers. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like that one as well. And then the 312, in order to balance out the karma out there for Amber Alerts, which is important and necessary,
yes.
We would like to fluff that up a little bit with something completely unnecessary and have Stephen Amell Alerts for...
For the, you, just for you.
Just for me.
Yeah.
And those who require them. I think that's
right,
appropriate.
Right, you can share.
Yes.
Yeah.
I feel like I wish I could vote for two. possibly three. I like this one. Do you have one you would like to vote? Senator, let's go with you first. I really go with you first. Senator?
Yes, I'm here. I've just never gone first before.
I know. That's why I thought that would be fun. I threw you off.
I'll be okay. Let me take a couple deep breaths. The one about pharmaceuticals
yes.
Was strong, but I really think the one about the mandating that people, they're opting in and then they have an opportunity to opt out for
the donor
donation.
Okay,
yeah.
So the donor law compelled to opt out rather than opt in. Okay, so that's one for the senator. Craig?
I don't want it to be a clean sweep and then give you an opportunity to not vote for one that you might also want, Patty. So I'm going to go with Stephen Amell Alerts for you.
Stephen Amell Alerts
for
me.
Just in case you were thinking going that way.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Bill Cerrones, would you like to vote on one of these laws? Do you have one you have? Bill, hey. Do you
Hello.
Hi, which law would you like to vote for? I know.
I'm not sure. I got to think about that one.
Okay, Rob Martier.
I'm going to reach across the aisle here and agree with Senator Kotowski that the disposal of prescription drugs idea has merit. However, I am going to go with the pets on the lap while
Ooh.
Driving law.
Oh.
And I think that can be lumped in with something much broader that basically suggests any sort of impaired driving, whether it's drunk, using your phone, pets, anything that distracts you from keeping your eyes on the road should be a law.
Okay. Intrigue.
So I got to go with that one as well, I think. Yeah, distracted and driving is the worst.
And Rob with some misdirection there, too.
Really?
That was great.
Wow. Yeah, that was, I know. I thought I was, that was great.
Well, I'm thinking about a run for Congress.
That was dramatic. So I was going to vote for Mark in the disposal of pharmaceuticals. So I guess no pets in laps wins by one vote because a lot of laws. I told you this was a good night.
You got two votes, right? Or no? Did you go? Mm-mm. You only got one for your vote?
Pharmaceutical. But by the way, so our winner is our texter who said no pets in laps.
Yeah, okay. Congratulations to that guy.
And to Mark's law, because I looked it up. In the city of Chicago, you can go to any police department and drop off because the Chicago Police Department and the Department of Public Health have partnered together to give you a place where you can dispose of them safely and properly. So go to any police department. And for me, it is the 16th District. And all of you can go to cityofchicago.org and look that up. And I'm guessing that there are other towns and municipalities that provide the same services. Senator Dan Katowski.
I just want the senator to know, Patty, real quick, that I would also back his legislation on the opting out law as well.
Oh, did you just... hold on a second. I think we just made two winners. I'm going to go ahead and do that.
Yeah.
We have two winners because we didn't give anything away last week. You know what? I think we forgot to do that. So let's...
Rob and I are doing something that I just want the people to be mindful out there that's not being done in Washington and oftentimes not being done in Springfield. We are working together. We are forging compromise.
I like this. This is a good night.
People in our community.
I've got a one.
Do you want to take a quick second to just applaud America then? State Senator Katowski? Way to go, America.
Okay, let's work together this way and let Rob Martier get to the news and let people know that the last news was sponsored by Cars for Kids. Senator Dan Katowski, follow him on Twitter at Senator Dan, and we will talk to you next week, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Patty. Big fan of your show.
Well, thank you. You are listening Pretty Late, and I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Remember, if you are watching us on WGNRadio.com, there are some things that you can watch and possibly win prizes for. And if you already know what that is, then you already know what you saw, and you know you should text us and tell us. That's not the most complicated. I believe I am the queen of complicated prize distribution.
Yeah, and if you can diagram it for us in your text message, that would be very helpful.
Yes, exactly, which has happened on WGN Radio.
Suggestions for things you would do differently, that sort of thing.
Oh, do you not like how that went?
No, I thought it was fine.
All right, then. Yeah. Okay.
Whatever it is that happened.
Yeah, exactly. We are, again, streaming on WGNRadio.com. You have an option when you go to the website to click Watch Now, and that's our show. Adam Selzer and Michael Glover-Smith have joined us in the studio. They are the authors of Flickering Empire, and How Chicago Invented the U.S. Film Industry. And when Adam Selzer was here a couple weeks ago, we talked about it a little bit. And now your book is available in many places. I'm guessing Amazon.com to begin with.
Oh, sure.
There were like a lot of pre-orders that you were excited about.
Yeah, I think it's actually selling better than any of my young adult novels ever have, actually.
What?
Yeah, I've never, it was achieving like sales rank numbers that I've never seen on my books before.
Really? And,
yeah.
And how did that make you, was it, you're like, really? I put Michael on the cover, like he's a co-author on this, and all of a sudden the sales?
Well, I always thought this was, this really bizarre little niche book, it's a book about silent film in Chicago. It seems like, we're getting so much more attention than I would have expected for it, so I'm very excited.
Plus, how cool would it be if you became like a textbook, like there are, people studying film?
Oh, it will.
It will. Hold on. Okay, let me find you. There we go. Oh. Yes. Yes, okay. Michael. You might be on the cover, but you cannot be heard.
I actually teach film history, and that's kind of my plan to
make
it a textbook and make my students read it.
Oh, is this mine, by the way? Because I'm just kind of keeping it.
Sure.
I have so many history books and I just like being able to go and refer to something. So this will be a wonderful addition to my collection. And, you posted on Facebook
Real quick, Patty, from the 630. It sounds like you guys work too much, or it looks like you guys work too much of your arms and not your legs in that last book.
Oh, yeah. I guess that person wins a $25 gift card.
Do.
What do we have on our prize list? I'm going to make sure that I'm not...
Paisano's Pizza and Pasta.
For our texter who knows that we worked out during during the midnight news. So that was what I was talking about. We work out as, once in a while, not every single night, but if you text us at 312-981-7200 and let us know which news break we did our workout. You saw us working out with Gwyneth Paltrow's trainer, and Craig was fascinated by it. But back to our guests in the studio who have brought the book. They've brought it because they wrote it, Flickering Empire. So I read earlier on your Facebook page, you were asking people who the guy in the middle
is.
Yeah,
can you recognize? It was kind of my challenge. Do you recognize the three mugs on the cover? We got three guys staring there.
Mm-hmm. I think I only know the one. I'm going to go with just Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah, Charlie Chaplin in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
He is flanked by Francis X. Bushman and Bronco Billy.
Bronco Billy?
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I didn't...
The original screen cowboy.
Right. Let me make sure I've got you nice and loud right there. It's all on me. It might just be my hearing. It's not you. So was he also... These guys were... Why? What brought them to Chicago to create our film industry?
They were all in SNA together. In fact, the S in SNA is... these the A and Anderson, the A of Anderson. SNA Studios was S and A.
I thought you were saying like there was something naughty, like you know, like S and M or something. And maybe it was an earlier part of the 20th century.
Maybe
and I
the
no 70s.
Maybe the 70s up on Wells Street.
That's right. So SNA was their production company.
It was the film studio. It was their building is still up on Argyle Street at St. Augustine College. You can still see the sign that says SNA on the front door. The sound stage is actually still there.
Really?
Yeah. And their big coup, the big thing was 100 years ago last month, they brought Charlie Chaplin to Chicago, the big up-and-coming star from Keystone.
Oh, wow.
And that was the big thing. We've signed Charlie Chaplin. They proceeded to tick him off as thoroughly as they possibly could his first few weeks here.
Oh, no.
He lived here exactly 3 weeks and made one film.
Yeah. Why? And,
they had promised him a huge signing bonus, and he spent the better part of those 3 weeks trying to track down George Spores, like, where's my money? Where's my money? And then when they screened the dailies, they wouldn't bother to make a positive print. They just screened the negative. Which drove him nuts.
Oh, that's what you mean. Because artists by nature are nuts. So when you add in people trying to drive someone nuts.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, Charlie Chaplin was a genius. And so there's only so far you can push somebody who knows how they want to do something, I'd imagine.
Not to mention the guy moved from California to Chicago in December.
Yeah. Aww.
And a really bad December at that, too. It was below zero when he got here.
Oh, no. Yeah. Yes. I contend that anybody that moves here in months outside of May through September are not going to be pleased with their choice. Maybe October. Ronnie, I don't want to I'll turn your microphone on, too. I don't mean to, like I'm going to be over here, too. What's your background, Michael, that you have teamed up with Adam to create this book?
I'm a film studies instructor.
Okay.
I teach film history at three local colleges, and
because just one's not good enough.
You're like, give
me the best deal.
I'm like a samurai. I travel from school to school.
That's exactly what
knowledge.
I was thinking. If you teach at more than one school, you must be like a samurai and have a code.
Exactly.
Yeah. What's your film instructor code then?
My film instructor code is to try and make the kids realize that film history is actually cool.
Yes.
It's not boring, dry, academic.
Well, if you're going to be studying, in particular when you're at a university where they have requirements, and one of them is in liberal arts and things like that, film history would sound like it would be the cooler of your choices.
Oh, yeah. Students love to take film history because they think, oh, it'll be fun to watch movies,
right.
You know. But, I'm just trying to... I hope some of my passion for the topic will rub off on them. So.
Now, do you do specifically the foundation of film, or do you also do film in its context and history? Because obviously there's a big conversation right now about American Sniper. We were talking about this before you guys came in studio, where, you probably can explain this, because last night people were saying that American Sniper is like a propaganda film.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking that it's one thing to be patriotic, it's another to be a film that's generated by the government in order to sway the way people think and kind of control their thoughts.
Right.
Right. That's, to me, is what propaganda is.
Yeah, I don't think it's a propaganda film. Mm-hmm. I actually thought it was quite good.
Okay.
And I think it's been, you know, not to turn this into a, this is kind of opening up a whole can of worms.
We have
but
plenty
it's really
of time.
About,
oh, really, let the worms out. I have hooks all over the place. Let's go fishing. Let's
that
go. Let's
that
fish.
Particular film is really more about post-traumatic stress disorder than anything.
Interesting. And nobody has said that.
Right. Exactly. That's the true subject of that film. And I think it's, I think there, you know, are certain right-wing factions that are trying to treat the film as if it's a recruitment tool, but just because that's how they're interpreting it doesn't mean that's what it is.
And that, you know, people who are on the left are seeing it as propaganda also doesn't carry as much weight either.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so I think you have found the perfect middle ground, is that it's a movie that's more about PTSD and everyone stop yelling at each other. Holy cats.
Exactly.
You know, Twitter is full of people saying, I saw American's Neighbor, now I'm going to go enlist. That's all over Twitter. But you pick any dumb point of view you can possibly think of, it's going to turn up on Twitter.
And it's going to turn ugly.
It's going to get ugly.
It got ugly fast. Yeah, very interesting. We're going to take a break here. And since I have you, we will continue to talk about, I think, if you don't mind, we could talk about film and history, in particular, your book, Flickering Empire, How Chicago Invented the U.S. Film Industry. And I do invite everyone to join our conversation from any point of view. 312-981-7200. As I always try to tell you, we won't argue with you. We just want to talk about it. This is a no-judgy venue. No judgy McJudgy pants.
A safe zone.
I'm not wearing... Yeah, a safe zone. Again, we're talking about SNA again. This is a no judgy pants. I'm not wearing my judgy pants. How's that? Okay. I'm wearing my open for conversation tights. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late, and I'm live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I am joined by Adam and Michael, who have written the book Flickering Empire, How Chicago Invented the U.S. Film Industry, and Ronnie joins us as well. By the way, Ronnie, let me talk to you for a second, because you are you're a listener who is a big fan of yours, Carolyn Dale.
Yes.
Yeah, so,
I love Carolyn.
Well, so do I. I've met her at Zany's. She's come to one of my shows. She's a big fan of ours. She's Craig, she's a listener who wants to know where the podcast is sometimes, so we've been trying to stay on top of it.
I like her.
She's good. Very much. Cool. And but you're both yoga instructors?
Yes, actually. I've gone to some of her classes, and I've been in classes with her. She's amazing.
She is wonderful, and we're glad to have someone she's a fan of in our studio, too.
Yeah, she has such a beautiful soul. I love her.
She's very, very cool. And we have a listener on the line who wanted to join the conversation about film. We are talking about the history of film in Chicago, but both Adam and Michael are well-versed in other aspects of film and history in Chicago. I think that's kind of we're open for all kinds of conversations. And Michelle, how are you doing?
Good. How are you guys?
We're good. Thank you for calling. What did you want to talk to us about?
Yes, I just wanted to make sure or ask the authors if they included the work of Oscar Michaud, who was... you laughed.
They're laughing because they were kind of saying off the air something about in that respect, right, Michael?
Absolutely. Yeah. There's actually a postscript in the book devoted solely to Oscar Michaud. There's basically a whole chapter devoted to him because he's a hugely important part of not only the legacy of film production here in Chicago, but just of American film history. And that it's a story that deserves to be much better known. I mean, he was a remarkable person and a remarkable filmmaker.
Yeah, it starts on page 177, actually, in their book. And it says postscript, Oscar and Orson. Mm-hmm. Right? Is that where it starts?
That's right. Oscar Michaud and Orson Welles. Are you a fan of his, Michelle?
Yes. And he was so prolific. And he made, and you guys can chime in further, what were called race films. He was a black American, African American filmmaker, and just prolific in the amount of film stock that films that he was able to do, and the manner in which he was able to do them. And you can't really talk about, as you said, American film history, certainly not Chicago film history, without talking about Oscar Michaud. And I just wanted to make sure that his contribution was noted.
Of course.
Oh, more than noted. They actually talk a little bit about how he wrote for The Defender and his own personal history and the films that he created as a Chicagoan. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
There you go. Oh, okay. I just wanted to make sure that is for you.
Now you know you have to buy the book, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
To see how that all comes together. It's actually, just reading, as you guys talking, I'm every time you come in, I'm like, I'm just going to go ahead and read while you guys talk. I probably should be part of the conversation. Michelle, again, that is Flickering Empire, How Chicago Invented the U.S. Film Industry. And thank you for joining our conversation.
Yeah. Bye.
Talk to you later. And people are calling. I think that film, you know, we know.
Everybody loves film.
Everybody does. Come on. 312-981-7200. Who's the person that doesn't love film? Call me and tell me that you just don't get it. Have you ever heard it? I mean, because television.
There's got to be somebody on Reddit.
There has to be on Reddit. Because there's always someone who says, I don't even own a television. It's all just junk. And those people, I say, yeah, but I like it because my brain feels mushy afterwards. Jeremy. What's going on, Jeremy?
Hey, what's going on, Mr. Smith? It's Jeremy Freeman. What's going on?
Oh, my God. One of my former students.
Oh.
Look out.
Jeremy from College of Lake County.
I had to call and say that I'm actually a film student in Columbia. And,
oh, that's right.
There's not too many books out there about Chicago cinema, and I got to give it up to Adam and Michael for writing this awesome book about something that isn't really known about in film history. You know, everyone talks about Hollywood and everything like that, and people actually don't pay attention to the history of Chicago and how important it was. So I'm very appreciative that there's now a book out there now about the history of Chicago cinema, because it's a very, very important part to understanding cinema and understanding its rich and fantastic history.
I think we were both shocked that there wasn't already a book about this stuff.
I mean, that was thank you for saying that, Jeremy, because that was really our kind of impetus for writing the book, was we realized early on no one has ever told this story before.
Right. Whenever we started out, we were doing my podcast. We were going out to the old studios and stuff and exploring what's left of them, and realized just how much information there was that could be extracted from old newspapers, old film magazines and things, but it hasn't been retold at all. It hasn't been processed. There hasn't been a book about Chicago's contribution, really. There's some talk about like various films that have been made in Chicago over the years, but the importance that Chicago had to the beginning of the whole thing really just gets ignored.
I'm sorry, I got distracted by that noise. Was that in the studio? It sounded like someone blowing in a bottle. It sounded like that. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jeremy, real quick, but we're going to go to the news in a moment. Before you go, do you want to say something else?
I just wanted to say that, you know, Adam said, there's not too many books about Chicago film history. I know there's one book, but it's not really in-depth and it's not really interesting. So I just want to give him major props again for writing a pretty interesting and fantastic book about Chicago film history.
From what I can tell in the 3 pages I've read, I'm in. Count me in. Thank you so much, Jeremy. We'll talk to you again soon. You are listening pretty late. I'm Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I'm laughing because we're all dancing. It's nice to have all guests in the studio who get that we...
Well, you were dancing at different commitment levels.
So Michael, I guess, would be... It's his first time.
I was the most subdued.
Yeah, subdued. I like that. And we're not going to say less committed. We're going to say subdued.
Yes.
But it's his first time in studio, so he's not quite sure what our level... It's kind of like that of Daniela, not wearing pajamas to the pajama situation that we had. So, and we couldn't invite everybody, Adam and Ronnie and now Michael. When we have another pajama party, the thing is, our trouble is managing the microphones.
Yeah.
So we are coming up with an idea to do a pajama party that's mostly in our green room, and then more, you know, like kind of in stages, because our Thanksgiving extravaganza, which was a lot of fun, also was a lot of people on mics.
Yeah.
So we're you are in our group. You're in the, and Michael, we'll warm up to you. So as you are warming up to us, as far as dancing and those levels of commitment,
absolutely. But I'll be fully committed by the time the night is through.
Oh, excellent. Well, that's good to know. And you've brought hard root beer for us.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic. It's making Michael and I a little belchy. So I apologize ahead of time. Ooh. It's really tasty. Michael, but on the cover of your book. You went all fancy with your full name, Michael Glover Smith, and Adam Selzer.
I had the middle name because Michael Smith is the most common name.
How hard is it for you to check into a hotel?
It's virtually impossible.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I have a friend named Stephen Jones.
Yeah, so right. Nobody believes him.
No, not gonna trust you when you really is it by the hour, Mr. Smith?
Exactly.
He and Adam Selzer have written the book "Flickering Empire: How Chicago Invented the U.S. Film Industry," and we've been talking a little bit about the early studios and why they ended up moving first from Chicago, and the rise and I guess ultimately the fall of Chicago film industry.
Yeah, that's the structure of the book, and we hit upon that really early on. We said, you know, how did the industry become so huge here, and then how did it all fall apart so quickly?
Well, did some of the rise involve the fact that Charlie Chaplin was involved so early on, even though he left?
No, it was kind of towards the tail end of Chicago's reign.
It was
Chaplin came. That's what it's having him here. If they had kept him here, it could have extended us a little further anyway.
Right,
but when he left after 3 weeks, it was kind of the beginning of the end, really.
Well, that makes sense because, if Charlie Chaplin, the one, you know, he's going to go wherever and say, don't bother going to Chicago. I mean, why would anybody else come if the one great guy you've got doesn't want to be here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He actually gave an interview to the Los Angeles Times in which he said it was too damn cold in Chicago.
Yeah. People don't need to be dissing on our city. We know how cold it is.
Yeah, we
get
know.
It. We know.
We know.
Steve is on the line and wants to join the conversation. I don't want to make that past tense because it sounds like he's changed his mind while he's been on hold. Hey, Steve. How's it going? Hey, Steve.
The Thomas Edison biography, and I can't remember the author or the name of the book, but... He wanted to bring film work to Chicago, but J.P. Morgan talked him out of it. And it was all because he was jealous of Nikola Tesla, the Columbian exhibition.
Well, okay.
A great thing just happened in my studio, by the way. Michael did not move except for maybe a little bit of his eyebrows. And Adam leaned back and said, I got this.
Okay, well, in 1893, when we had the World's Fair here, there was a big battle over what kind of electricity, whether it was going to be Edison's brand or Tesla's brand. It ended up being Tesla's, but by then everybody associated Edison with light bulbs anyway. But Edison actually planned to make that World's Fair be the introduction of the kinetoscope, the thing where you'd turn the crank and look into the peephole and you'd see the moving picture inside. But the problem was, Edison tended to farm out most of his actual inventing work, and the guy who was in charge of making the kinetoscope had a nervous breakdown, so it wasn't quite ready in time for the fair.
How was that, Steve? That's a
great explanation. It wasn't in the book.
He was. W.L. Dixon was the guy in charge of the kinetoscope, and it ended up being in Chicago a few months later. There was a kinetoscope parlor on State Street, and a lot of like the attractions at the World's Fair ended up being early kinetoscopes. I was like Sando the Strongman. There's one of the earliest kinetoscope films. It's just Sando flexing his muscles, and he was an attraction at the World's Fair
while wearing only a loincloth.
Only a loincloth.
Where can we find these?
You can see them on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. There's all these, a lot of these things. But those that have survived are on YouTube now. And Sando actually had a book that you can get on Google Books. Like, people ask me, could I be strong? Yes, you could all be strong.
That's
okay, you guys have done way more research than I have.
No, by the way, Steve, can I just tell you what it looks like in the studio? So Adam, who is a regular guest on the show, and I'm just going to know Michael from we have a small history together. Mm-hmm. I've seen you many times, and it's weird when you came in, it was out of context for me.
Right.
When you see someone, and then you say, I worked at Uptown Tobacco, which is next to Zany's. Yes, many, many years of hanging out. But what I enjoyed most, Steve, in relation to your question, was, again, how Adam was ready to jump, but Ronnie, his wife, I can see like she's like, that's my man. He knows so many things. This is why you need to watch WGNRadio.com, just so you know. That was what just happened in my studio. So Steve, you're right. Wasn't that fun?
Yes, it was.
Well, you should have been in the studio. It was way more fun. All right, thank you. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay. Adam blows my mind with the amount of information that's in his head.
Yeah, I watched you.
Passionate he is about what he knows and what he's researched
and what he has access to. It's one thing to know things, but it's the other thing to have access to it, right?
If he doesn't have access, he creates ways to get access.
I don't know what you mean by that exactly.
No, I mean access. I mean access to it in a way that just, I mean, like
being
I,
able to draw it out of your sub, out of your memory and out of your subconscious.
Exactly, yeah. And then to articulate it. Those are all things that are at play. Like I have a lot of information. Like I'll go home from a show. Oh, you know what I should have said. Do you know? It's you know.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So. One thing that always impressed me about him is that he. You know, like you said, you think about it later, like, oh, I should have said that. Mm-hmm. He can do it in the moment.
Yes, and that's what I'm talking about.
Sometimes I get lucky.
That's why he's a great tour guide. You know, he's got to be able to bust out facts and figures.
Mm-hmm. Well, and being an instructor in film history, I'm guessing that you also have to, you know, you're going to get questions.
That's a similar
skill
set.
That's true, yeah. It's very similar. In fact,
you're a tour guide of history.
Adam said very early on, he said he was a Chicago historian who knew a lot about film, and I was a film historian who knew a lot about Chicago.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think our strengths kind of complemented each other. Yeah.
We are talking to Michael Glover Smith. He prefers to be called Mike, but not on the cover of his book. And also Adam Selzer. They are the authors of Flickering Empire, How Chicago Invented the Film Industry. Where can people find this book, by the way?
All the usual online outlets. I don't know how many local stores are going to be carrying it right now.
Really?
You know, well, I don't know yet.
They're missing out because
Better independent bookstores should have it.
All of the better bookstores should have it. I'm always hesitant to tell people about stores. I have such bad luck with my young adult novels getting into stores, no matter which publisher I'm on.
So you just flinch when you think about it.
Yeah, it's my least favorite question is where can I find a copy of it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
If I don't say Barnes & Noble, the next question is, what about Barnes & Noble?
Oh, no.
If it's not at Barnes & Noble, I just have to walk back with my tail between my legs.
Well, I mean, I'm guessing if you Google
if you Google Flickering Empire, there's links all over.
Google it.
Well, if you want to, I can swing by a Barnes & Noble on the way and just drop one off.
Just put it on the display.
That's right, that it doesn't work.
It's kind of like the opposite of shoplifting.
It is. Have you done that?
Shop dropping.
We've created a new craze.
Shop, drop, and roll.
I like it. 720 WGN, inventing stuff as we go. More after this. Oh, you know what? There's poor Adam's the only one that committed. You know what? I feel bad. That was wrong. That was wrong of all of us.
The
we did
song
not.
Just wasn't jaunty enough.
It wasn't jaunty enough. Da, 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 yeah. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining us is Ronnie Davis Selzer?
Yep.
And I pause because we have a friend of the show named Robbie Ganny Davis, so I panic that I might be combining people that I know. So Ronnie joins us in studio as well as authors Michael Glover Smith and Adam Selzer, who have they've come together. They've united forces as a film historian and Chicago historian and historians to write the book Flickering Empire: How Chicago Invented the U.S. Film Industry. And we're learning. I sense that we're going to have you back because I'm also going to read the book and then have
anytime.
More questions. Yeah. Well, anytime, I demand that you be here anytime I say.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm 5 minutes away. It's no problem.
Michael, is it 5 minutes for you as well?
No, I live on the far north side.
What's far north?
It's Edgewater.
Oh, that's not. It's straight north, though.
Straight north.
Yeah.
Straight north. Shot on the red line.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, there you go. So it's a little bit different for your schedule. So we want to make sure that the last train does not leave the station.
You know, it's kind of an epic journey, but I'm willing to make it.
Epic, even.
I'm willing to make it for you, Patty.
Is it as epic as the folks who were running film studios here in Chicago? Because it was all still. Was it
it's
still?
Not, it's epic. Not that epic.
No. Because imagine by carriage how long it would take or wagon to get. I'm guessing it was still some early cars.
Oh, gosh.
I'm saying. Right, to move equipment and the kinds of things. I mean, what would they be using in the early 1900s as far as equipment goes, you know?
Trucks, trains.
Mm-hmm.
And people had motor cars by then.
Not all of them.
Not everybody, no. But, you know, they were available to people with the money. The kind of money that these film studios were taking in for a while there.
Mm-hmm. And how? So what was the cost of going to a film in this time period? This is like the 1910s to...
Kind of depends on where you went, but mm-hmm. usually about a nickel.
A nickel. Mm-hmm. It's exorbitant. Isn't it weird to think? I mean, it was at the time probably a luxury a bit.
For, not really.
Not it was
really.
Very, very working class entertainment.
Everybody went to the
everybody
movies back
did.
Then.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
It was huge with immigrant communities.
Mm. And why is that? Because it wasn't necessarily reliant on language. I mean, was it?
Yes, that's part of why Charlie Chaplin was such a hit. You know, you didn't need to speak English to find The Little Tramp funny.
Right. And when did he start his career in the United States?
The United States around the 1910 range. I don't want to guess an exact year.
You'll guess.
he got to Chicago in 1914, and then he had already been out for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
He'd come through Chicago with a vaudeville troupe playing right about at a theater right about where the Trader Joe's is now by Roosevelt and Wabash.
Mm-hmm.
right around there. And he stayed at a crummy hotel on Wabash Street someplace that he talked about.
And you guys were saying that Bronco Billy was one of the
founders of SNA Studios here. Yeah.
Well, because he was always a showman, so it makes sense that he would transition from these big shows that he was traveling with to go, how can I make this a little bit easier and stay in one place?
Which he still didn't. He was still going back and forth to California all the time.
Oh, really?
SNA had like a satellite studio out there.
Where is he from? Do you know where he was from originally, by the way? Because I know that Wild Bill Hillcock was like from Nebraska, wasn't he?
Oh. Yeah, and Buffalo Bill was, I don't know, probably from maybe it was Buffalo Bill.
yeah. Bronco Billy was from New Jersey. He had never been further west of Chicago when he started making films.
We have a fist pump in the producer's booth.
Where was he from, you said? You said the beautiful, wonderful, gorgeous state of...
It's a garden.
I'm from New Jersey, and I brag about it.
It's a wonderful, beautiful place to be from, the Garden State. Absolutely.
He's very proud of the fact they have beaches.
Yeah, we do. We have real beaches with ocean that, you know, waves that crash,
and
things
Snookies,
that are wonderful.
Yeah.
And Snooki. Snooki somewhere. That's not the only person in New Jersey.
Yeah, the shore, yeah.
There happen to be others.
Springsteen's there occasionally when he's not on tour.
Is he occasional? Does he live there? I would think that he would be like, you know what?
He does. Lives there, yeah? He lives in Colts Neck. No, maybe not Colts Neck. I forget what it is.
No address?
You don't have the exact address?
Yeah, you don't
have to hang out in Asbury Park anymore?
So
I don't think anybody lives in Asbury Park anymore.
So tell me a little bit about I'm looking at a picture of The Wonderful Wizard of Oz in 1910, directed by Otis Turner.
Yes.
Yeah.
The first Wizard of Oz movies were made here. Not a lot of people know that.
Yeah.
Look at my face. Did not know that.
Yeah. Now, the early Wizard of Oz movies you can find on YouTube aren't the ones from Chicago. It was really interesting what they did is they filmed these little Oz movies and they actually colorized them. So these were color films that L. Frank Baum actually traveled around with, and he would interact with the movies live on stage.
In 1908.
Yeah. The very early color films. The girl who played Dorothy, her name was Romola Remus. What a great name. She was
really
still teaching piano in Uptown up through like the 1980s, too.
Mm-hmm.
And her father is sometimes said to be the inspiration for The Great Gatsby.
Like, what?
Yeah, she's a real rabbit hole to start researching.
Wait, so, I mean, was F. Scott Fitzgerald from this? When did he roll through
apparently,
Chicago?
Apparently her father was some big bootlegger.
Oh.
And was also involved in some kind of major scandal, like a murder. I can't remember.
He killed somebody.
Yeah, he killed somebody. Yeah. You look up Romola Remus, it gets pretty interesting pretty quickly. She was the first person to play Dorothy in a movie.
So she often reminisced in newspapers about
she would write into the Tribune and tell about memories of playing Dorothy, and I think she talked about bumping into Robert Todd Lincoln on the street one time with her father.
And it also says she remembers meeting Robert Todd Lincoln.
Yeah,
is that what you just said.
Did you just say that?
Oh, yeah. I'm reading it while he's saying it.
Like I just said.
So weird. Wait a minute, I'm reading while he's talking. It's very strange.
Yeah,
yes.
she wrote an interesting reminiscence
about Mr. Lincoln.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly,
wasn't Robert Todd Lincoln? He had burned all of his mother's papers while she was in a mental
institution.
Possibly,
yeah. He kind of railroaded her into the trial for her sanity, which is just a couple of blocks away from here. Actually,
right. Yeah, I think we talked about that
and
before.
My Ghosts of Lincoln book is out in a few months, and I part of part of the thing was she got people debate about exactly how into spiritualism she was, but yeah, when part of her trial was, you know, she was like talking to her husband ghost who was giving her the exact date of her death. She like got all prepared for it one time, and they totally railroaded her in that trial, but it's hard to imagine that they wouldn't have convicted.
Right. With the kinds of things she was doing.
The kind of things she was doing and saying, yeah. It's, they prepared the case for a long time and gave her like 20 minutes. It was a horribly unfair trial, but you can't really blame them for finding the way they did.
Well, we were talking about The Wizard of Oz. I just want to say from one of the pictures, because you have some wonderful photographs throughout the book, is that I'm struck by the fact that the Tin Man never really changes from this film in 1910 to 1939 when they filmed it.
It's remarkable how similar it is.
It's exactly. I mean, except for the crotch plate. Other than that, right? I mean, and maybe that says more about the actor who ended up playing the Tin Man.
That's the real problem with Buddy Ebsen, huh?
It wasn't the silver makeup at all. You know what's sad is I remember that Buddy Ebsen was originally cast as Tin Man. I can't remember.
I was going to say the same thing. I can't remember who actually played it. I don't remember who was originally Buddy Ebsen.
Yeah.
Who was it, guys?
Nope. I know Burt Lahr was the lion, and
Ray
obviously Bulger. Ray Bulger. Bulger was
Ray
this,
Bulger.
The poor Tin Man. And we're gonna get a text any minute now. But yeah, so it's amazing like how much we don't even know. And is that part of why Oz Park is, or is it because Frank Oz?
L. Frank Baum.
L. Frank Baum. Was...
He wrote a good chunk. He was living in Logan Square, I think. He wrote a pretty good chunk of Wizard of Oz on Michigan Avenue, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that's why we have Oz Park here, yeah.
Oh, and I would imagine that's what I could see seeing a cowardly lion walking up Michigan Avenue. And, well, because it's actually a political
thing, the same company, Selig Polyscope. Actually, there was a great story that was really well documented at the time. They actually brought a lion up there from the zoo to shoot. They were making a movie that was supposed to be Teddy Roosevelt in Africa. And a lot of people thought it was a documentary about Roosevelt on his safari in Africa. It actually wasn't.
Right.
But they actually, you know, shot a lion in the process of making it. There was no thing at the end saying no animals were harmed, obviously.
Right. Yeah, take her to leave it. We don't care.
Yeah.
We've been talking to Michael Glover Smith and Adam Selzer about their book, Flickering Empire. You can find it in your various... Do we not want to say specifically because...
Yes, I don't know. I don't know which source I have right now.
Oh, that's so sad. I knew it was Jack Haley. Did we get a text or did you Google it? You Googled? Yeah, Jack Haley played the Tin Man. We all will not forget that.
Yeah, we all know our Oz trivia better than our actual Oz.
Yeah. Well, that happens.
We know the fascinating facts.
Flickering Empire. Google that and you'll find different places to buy this book. I mean, you know, we should make this like our little book club. We should have everybody read it. And in 3 weeks, we will reconvene and talk about having read. I'm doing 3 weeks because I'm not a student in your class, Mr. Smith.
It's a swift. To read, Patty.
I know, but I have a stack of books, including Play Me Backwards. I still have to get, which is Adam Selzer's young adult novel. You can find all those as well at Google Adam Selzer and Flickering Empire: How Chicago Invented the U.S. Film Industry. Thank you so much, you guys, for coming in studio.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely, we'll have you back, and thank you for the hard root beer, Ronnie. We will see you next time too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks. Do you want me to do the show or just keep dancing? Because I think I'm gonna just keep dancing.
I don't know. My last bump song was said to not be dance worthy enough, so I figured I'd use some Bruno Mars.
I don't think you should take it that way.
No, it's fine. I want to get up and dance.
Everything doesn't have to be dance worthy. Sometimes we're just coming back.
You got
to
be mellow
for conversation. Mm-hmm. But we can dance now because we have to keep our cardio going. We had our trainers in yesterday from our CrossFit, from Doghouse CrossFit, mm-hmm. Northwest Highway. We will be there in about 15 hours. 16 hours
really?
From
That's
now.
That's when we'll... Okay.
Yes, we're going to be at the... I don't know. Come hang out. Work
yeah,
out
come
with
hang
us.
Out with us. Sure, why not?
We are going to be... I believe we're going to film some of this tonight as well.
I believe so. I believe that we'll have a film guy there to make that happen
for us. And, you know, as part of our... Some of our friends, now it's Doghouse, but also the reason we are going to Doghouse is because friend of the show and guest, Peter Nikias, he works there. He's the beat crime reporter, and I believe he's got the beat crime reporter, the crime beat reporter, but I think he's changed his title. I saw breaking news reporter. I don't know if that's a new...
Well, look at that guy.
Breaking news reporter.
Taking off in the
world.
He's
not messing around.
He was always reporting on breaking news, though.
Your crime is often breaking.
Yeah. It's usually not dead by the time you get there. The story isn't dead.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's keep going, hopefully...
So
it's his birthday. We are an hour and 10 minutes late. We are an hour and 10 minutes late to say happy birthday to Peter Nikias. I'm assuming he is asleep because he works out at the Doghouse and he's probably exhausted.
Yeah, he'll be there in 4 hours.
There's a great picture of him working out with kettleballs and that's what
it
says.
That didn't sound right.
It's in kettlebells. I'm sorry,
kettlebells. Okay, good. He doesn't have a bunch of balls.
And they're not made out of kettles.
Got it.
I apologize to everyone involved. But yes, they like their hashtags, by the way, at the Doghouse CrossFit.
It seems like a lot of people nowadays really like their hashtags.
Here's their hashtags. Ready? You ready for the
hashtag?
Okay, so for Peter Nikias' birthday, it says, happy birthday to hashtag Doghouse family member at Peter Nikias. He's been putting in hard work for quite some time. Hashtag HBD, happy birthday. Right, so that's the first one. Hashtag WODs, don't know what that is. Hashtag CrossFit, hashtag why you're rogue, hashtag birthday cake, hashtag CrossFit family, hashtag Doghouse. Strong. Hashtag Mercury Sable.
Sure.
Hashtag how old are you now? Hashtag celebrate good times. Hashtag cool in the gang.
That's a lot of...
Wait, celebrate good times and then another hashtag for cool in the gang. I'm not done. That. That's nice.
And I'm not done. Hashtag birthday boy. Hashtag birthday burpees. Hashtag burpees. Hashtag kettlebells. Hashtag HFY.
See, now that's hilarious. And the reason that that's so funny is not just because of how ridiculous it is, but some people think that hashtag is SEO, search engine optimization, where you're just putting like keywords into Google so people can find your post.
Right.
You don't need to hashtag that much stuff because people aren't going to search for all those things.
Well, now
they're not going to look up hashtag burpees.
I hashtagged kettlebells and I've got the inner athlete.
Oh, good.
The inner athlete and Spartan courses and seminars, scheduling and pricing.
Yeah, no, I don't understand why we're using these sort of internet things.
Because I am now linked to everything kettlebell related. I can now see all of that on my Facebook page.
Right. These little shortcuts are really taking over our lives.
I have to see what happens if I do Cool in the Gang. Hold on a second.
Please do that.
Hashtag Cool in the Gang. First comes up, Peter Nicky.
And then nothing.
And then rest in peace, Clifford Adams.
Oh.
From January 13th.
That took a negative spin.
Well, yeah, I didn't know. Well, now we know what happens.
Right, when you click on a random hashtag.
When you click on birthday burpees, let's see if that happens.
Hashtagging with Patty Vasquez.
Just Move Fitness and more. Okay, also in our social media corner, we want to say hello to a listener in Italy. And to that end, I need some help. Do we have a listener that speaks Italian? 312-981-7200. Mm-hmm. That's 312-981-7200. And I apologize, but it's going to be better if you call in rather than text, because I actually have I have our listener, Davi. He's told me how to pronounce his name through Twitter, and I want to make sure that we get this auditorily as well. His explanation to me, Craig, is this. He's following us in Italy, and he's been listening to our show. He's working on his English, so the fact that he's we are his resource for improving his English, I apologize to everyone involved. As a friend of mine asked, so let me get this straight. You've got an Irish-Mexican Chicago comedian helping someone learn English.
Yep, that's what's happening.
And the biggest complaint people have is that you talk very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So there's someone right now is going, I got other complaints. So this is the explanation he has for me to pronounce his name. Hold on one second. I had it a second ago. It was where the accent falls. Okay, so correct pronunciation is da like dart.
Right.
Da V like video. So da V, da V. There we go. I've got half of it so far. De like destiny. Destiny, right? So David.
David.
David. David. David?
I think it's David.
No, because the accent goes on the A, not the I. That's what we've been getting wrong.
Hmm.
You, because it would, video, right? David. Destiny. How do you say?
What is happening on the show right now?
How do you say the D E in destiny?
I don't know. Destiny.
David.
David. I don't know what people think we're doing right now, but we're trying to help someone learn English.
Wait.
This is how he's going to learn English.
Bye.
We can't say your name, David, and we know this language.
It's not David. David.
The internet thinks it's David.
David. David.
YouTube seems to think that Italian
try it again.
People
tell
say.
Me what, tell me what they say on the
David.
No.
That's what they say on the internet. That's
you
what YouTube.
You sound like this speak and spell. That we have nobody that speaks Italian that can call us right now and clarify how to pronounce
David.
David. See, David. Do you see?
David.
David. Oh, he's saying David.
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 That's what he's doing. Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to go with David.
We don't know. That's what YouTube thinks.
We are thrilled to have a listener in Italy.
Yeah, way to go. I hope you keep listening while we continue to butcher your name,
well,
probably.
So he has, and his last name is Novalet. I'm going to go with Novalet.
Novale.
Is the T silent in Italian?
I don't know. I find Novalet. That if you're saying words that you can't pronounce, you just mumble most of it, and then you pretend you said it right.
You know what's great? Novale. Not only that, tonight I completely forgot the feature act's name at Zany's on Wells, and I was saying, another round of applause for Emily Galati, and I tried making sure it was underneath the applause for Emily, and he was like, hi.
Right.
He's like, it's Sam. Sam was my name.
Well, Sam's a tough name. You don't meet many Sams nowadays.
I was not good tonight. I'm just going to go ahead and say that right now. So, David. I mean, if I say it that way, if I kind of David Novalet in Italy is listening to our show on his way to work, and we hope that we've come at least a little bit close in bridging the language gap by butchering your name and helping you along with English. It's a lot of responsibility. I'm not sure that I'm the right person for it. Many people here can attest to that. Morty would like to help us out a little bit. Hi, Morty. How are you doing?
Hey, kids. How are you all doing today?
Oh, we're...
Spell
spell the name for me, please.
D-A. Oh, he's not listening yet. We have to do this again at 1:30. Okay, so it's D-A-V-I-D-E. So it's David with an
E.
He said the accent is not on the I. It sounds like you're putting the accent on the I and not on the A. He said the accent is on the A.
It's D-E-Z-A-D-A.
D-A. It's spelled like David, but with an E at the end.
Let's see this for other names.
So the accent on the A.
Yes.
So it's David.
That sounds like the accent is on the... It sounds like the accent's on the
now,
I.
Now, how would you say Morty? Morty. That's how I'd say his name.
Yeah.
That's how I pronounce your name. I don't know what you say.
I don't either. I don't listen to myself.
Right.
But, okay, it's a D-E sound. D-A is a D-E sound.
D-A is a... He said it's like D-A, like in Dart.
I think he has to call us. I think at this point, we cannot have our listeners tell us.
We have to stop.
Person,
he's not even listening right now.
Right, this one guy, though, who's upset at the way we're pronouncing his name.
He's not upset. He's very cheerful. He's very cheerful about
it.
David.
David.
Thank you, Morty.
Now, I spent half the summer with two Italian ladies last year.
Oh, did you?
And got it.
That sounds like the beginning of a great movie.
David?
I have a bit of a grasp on the way the tongue and lips move around letters.
Because of the two ladies from Italy. All right, thank you so much.
Thank you,
Morty. We have Kathy, who says she can help.
Yeah, Kathy's going to nail it.
Kathy, what are we doing wrong here?
Okay. Are you there?
Yes. Are you? Okay. Yes. Cool.
The accent is on the last A, Davida. The accent is Davida, because I have a cousin by that name. The accent is on the last A, not the first A.
But it's not an A at the end. It's an E at the end.
See, and we're not trying to wish people Merry Christmas in Spanish or anything, so I don't really understand Navidad.
Is it David?
It's David, but with an E at the end, not an A at the end.
Can we just give this listener a nickname and not try to say his real name anymore?
Sounds with an A. It really is. It's our letter A. D-A-V-I-D-A. And it's Davida. I have a cousin by that name.
No, but it's David with an E.
Let's just call him Italian Dave from now on.
We're tabling this for another until after the 1:30 news because I don't know.
What's his last name?
Novalet.
How do you spell it?
Google search him.
No, you can follow him on Twitter. Can everybody follow David on Twitter?
No, David? He's Italian Dave. That's all we're going to call him from now on.
Italian Dave.
Yeah.
That's my cousin's name. It's Davida. I think an E or an A was misunderstood, but it's Davida.
Okay, so his Twitter handle is at Danova. That's D-A-N-O-V-A 71. So at Danova 71. And I'm going to
312-981-7200. Please call in and tell us what other names we don't know how to pronounce and help us pronounce them. All night on WGN Radio.
Kathy, I can't thank you enough because we're tickled and I hope that you're okay with that. But this is, I feel bad. I think we're all butchering his name and I don't know if we're going to get it right until he calls.
Okay. But anyway, you got the last name easier than the first name.
Novalet?
Danova. Danova, D-A-N-O-V-A.
71 on Twitter, at Danova.
Danova. You got that right, but it's Davida. I'm sure of that because my cousin's name that. See, the letters in Italian, R-A is, the vowels in Italian are A-A-E-O-U. A-A-E-O-U.
A-A-E-O-U.
So how are you supposed to pronounce, like, meatballs? Is there a different, more Italian way to say meatballs?
No,
meatballs.
Meatballs, that's English. That's not Italian.
Spaghetti.
But R-A, you know, when we say A, that's their E. A-E-I-O-U. That's our syllable.
Then what's their E?
And theirs is A-A-E-O-U. Their A is pronounced A, and their E is pronounced A.
Got it. Thank you so much, Kathy, for all the help with that.
Davida.
Okay. I think we should never do a segment where we try to pronounce his name again.
Only we're doing it again at 1:30. You're listening Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720. Patty Vasquez. Hold on, Vasquez. 720 WGN. Oh, it is pretty late. You You're listening Pretty Late, and I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I think we'll resume our trying to pronounce Davide's name after the 1:30 news, because he's not listening right now. He's in Italy on his way to work in a little bit. He said he'll be listening after 8:30 his time, which I believe is 1:30 our time. So we want to line that up accurately, unless I'm wrong. Maybe he's listening right now. Last night we were talking about a town in Ohio that is planning to dispense birth control for pigeons, and the Hobby Lobby is very upset. They are making sure that that it's not free.
Yeah, that's definitely ridiculous.
Not free.
You can't. I mean, come on.
That's
they definitely should pay for that.
No,
the pigeons should absolutely pay for that.
It's an unborn life. Those are eggs. Even right. Depending on maybe, I don't know how pigeon eggs taste.
Yeah, I don't know how that whole situation works actually.
We
I don't know if you wanted to explain all that.
Susan Berkus was saying that pigeons can be aggressive, and I've never known pigeons to be aggressive.
Yeah, she actually had a friend who was attacked by pigeons, and then was afraid of all birds because of that pigeon attack.
Yeah, and I rightfully so. I've told you.
Yeah, I think that if you got attacked by a group of anything, you can then be afraid of that thing. Whatever it is.
Whatever
clowns,
animal, yes. Yeah. Bears.
Or an animal.
Bears are terrifying.
Well, see, a group of bears, I don't think that you live through that.
The threat is implied.
Right. Just one bear is enough to make you afraid of bears.
Have you ever, and this is comedian Fred Klutz territory. He's a good friend of mine. Mm-hmm. He was one of my bridesmaids. He loves when I say that. bridal attendants, he prefers. But he has material, these jokes about how they say when you're being attacked by a bear. Well, one, if you're being chased by a bear, make sure you're with somebody who runs slower than you do.
Yeah. For sure.
So, and maybe trip him. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is, they say that if you are under attack by a bear, play dead. And Fred's question is, do you play dead until you are dead? Like, how much do you commit to playing
right, is
dead?
Is it method acting?
You're right. So, that's, I mean, the bear starts eating you, and you're like, hey, I was playing dead. You're not.
just game. That was a game. That was a joke.
You're not going along with
the
rules.
Stop eating me.
So a woman was jogging and was attacked. Now, I could actually see she was attacked by
an owl. Yeah.
And we kind of think of owls as being cute.
Right, or wise.
Little Hedwig, Harry Potter.
Yeah. Or, Winnie the Pooh.
Wise, you're right, though. Yeah, the very wise owl. Mm-hmm. How many licks does it take to get to the sun?
I think three was the answer.
Three, because you bite it.
Right. How can you not? But yeah, no, apparently an owl attacked a woman while she was jogging. And
hates health.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't try
to
stay in shape.
He's just really upset with other people being fit.
You are moving way too fast, lady.
I mean, this, again, and this goes back to what we talked about last night. To me, that story is hilarious. And the idea of seeing that
we
is
hope she's
hilarious.
Okay.
Right, we hope she's okay. Mm-hmm. But it's just one. So it probably couldn't have taken her life. The one owl probably couldn't have killed her.
They might have. They have the claw. Like,
I don't know that
talons.
One owl
don't they have talons?
Could take out a human.
Is it word talons or talons?
It's talons.
Talons.
But a person defending and stuff, even not a very strong person, I don't think one owl can best us.
Well, the great horned owl is the most powerful owl, by the way. Did you know
Does he lead with his horns, and how sharp are they?
It was a man, by the way. I don't mean to imply that he was a woman because he couldn't fend off an owl attack.
Right.
Not that being a woman makes you less of a
No, it does not. I feel like we could all take one owl. Anyone on Earth right now that's above a certain age could take an owl in a hand-to-hand combat situation.
You're going
to
be so attacked by a flock of owls on our way out of here.
See, a flock is different, though, because then there's multiple of anything can lose.
You're going to be attacked by one, and the rest of them are going to sit around laughing at you, just so you are aware of that. This jogger, his name is Ron Jacks, and he said it was like a huge electric shock had run through my body, or like I'd been hit in the head by a 2x4. He thought he'd been hit by lightning. It attacked him so hard. He began running faster. I guess. I mean, if you thought that you were being hit, right, you would just accelerate your speed. As he ran, the attacker struck again and again, and he noticed a large winged animal above his head. He thought at first that it was a bat, which that's terrifying too. Bats, rabid, not like you're friendly, like I'm Bruce Wayne. I'm here to make sure that nobody hurts
you. I don't think
any
of those bats were friendly.
No.
The ones that were attacking Bruce Wayne.
Mm. So it turns out that it may have been a great horned.
Great horned owl.
Thank you very much.
Right.
And they're fierce hunters with a wingspan of 5 feet. That's pretty darn big.
Yeah, but you think that one owl could take a human?
We
have a wingspan of more than 5 feet-ish or around. I don't know how much my wingspan is, but it's good.
Well,
got a decent wingspan.
Its big yellow eyes are often compared to those of a cat and are amplified by an orange facial disc outlined in black.
No, I think it would be terrifying for anything to randomly attack you. I, it's okay to be afraid, but at the same time, it's also hilarious because that's probably not going to actually kill the person, just the one owl.
I'm trying to see if it could, it can close down on its prey with the force of about 30 pounds.
Okay, 30 pounds, that doesn't sound terribly fearful.
Right, a 3 or 4 year old taking you down, but right. A 3 or 4 year old that can fly.
Child. From the 414, reminds me of the scene from High Anxiety when Mel Brooks is bombarded by pigeons and they poop on him.
Well, see, that's the thing. I don't,
thank you, Jeff.
This horned owl, like, that would be, that's aggressive if it both attacks you and then says, yeah, I can't take you down. This is happening to your head.
Yeah, that is just unfair and mean, unkind.
Yeah, I'm not finding anything that says it poses a danger to human beings. No. More after this on 720 WJAN. More, but it might be owls. It might be, it's a Little House on the Prairie. I so want this book. You are listening pretty late after the 1:30 news. Once again, we're going to try one more time to pronounce our listener in Italy's name, Davide.
Davide, from the 847 real quick. I was attacked by birds in Geneva. It was unpleasant.
Oh, it, was there a dot? Was it? It was dot 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 because
right.
That
that's
implies...
how I'm going to read it. They didn't actually write it that way, but that's how I assume they wrote it. It was unpleasant.
And we're not saying that it would be pleasant.
No, yeah, no one's assuming it would be pleasant. But all of your friends 847 laughed while you were getting attacked by birds.
Tim Clue, another comedian, has material about being attacked by a deer and like how it looks weird because when it raises up on its hind hooves, it's kind of like batting at you like this and it sort of punches like, you know, like it hasn't been trained
right, yeah,
in martial
really
arts.
Not...
It doesn't, but yet can be.
I mean, would you laugh if T-Rex was attacking you with his little tiny hands? Would at least a little bit be funny?
If it involved his teeth. Right. Yeah, once his teeth are in action, I think that all bets are
funny,
off.
Yeah. Yeah.
So coming up after the news, one more time, 312-981-7200. Are we getting close to pronouncing Davide's name correctly? The accent's on the A, Davide. So if I just whisper the rest of it, does that make it correct? Davide, Davide. I think that's it, Davide. Okay, after the news, 720 WGN, here's Rob Martier with your update. That's pretty. I feel very, what is this again?
That is the Italian national anthem. It is called Fratelli d'Italia.
Do you have to be an opera singer to sing that?
They only allow those opera singers in the country to sing it.
And again, although the national anthem for the United States is hard to sing.
Yes.
But manageable until a certain point.
Right. And you can always just, you know, mouth words and not actually sing them if someone near you is a better singer.
That's true internationally.
Right.
Yes.
I feel like you could do that anywhere. An opera singer is standing every fifth person and just let them do it.
Oh, I like that.
Right.
I need to stand next to an opera singer and just make it seem like that's me.
That's the
can
two
they
of you together.
Stand behind me.
Sounding as one voice.
Yes. That we are playing Craig is playing the Italian national anthem for our fan in Italy who listens to pretty late on his way to work. His name is
Italian Dave.
You've decided it's Italian Dave.
Right.
Italian Dave. I think that might be the best way for us to go.
Yeah, I feel like he needs a nickname at this point.
We've tried to, in various ways, pronounce his name in the last half hour.
We had listeners passionately tell us how to do it.
And passionately say, stop doing it.
Right.
As well. and by the way, for those of you who don't appreciate that, we're just tickled that we have a fan in Italy. So
yeah.
we're sort of basking in that moment.
The power of the radio station and the internet's. You know?
Yes. I want to say Davide, but
Davide. I like that.
I like that too. It's pretty. But I think Italian Dave might have to work.
Maybe
so we don't...
if that's not how he pronounces his name, he should just start saying it that way.
Italian Dave.
It is a pretty way to say it.
Oh, Davide.
Yeah.
Davide.
Just start saying that as your name now.
Davide.
And then we're not wrong
Davide.
Anymore.
Yeah. I am struggling with it a little bit. Can you say mine? Patricia, by the way. Oh, ouch.
Okay, sorry.
Patricia.
Patricia.
Yours in a different... Greg.
Greg.
Craig.
No, people just can't say my name
Greg.
In some languages. Mm. They just can't.
Now the people who were angry before, angrier.
Well, no, that comes from me visiting my wife's family in Mexico.
Oh.
And the people in Mexico who'd never heard the name before couldn't say it.
Greg?
Couldn't. Yeah.
Well, my mom says Estef.
Gregorio.
Gregorio.
I got a lot of Gregorio, which is not at all what my name is, but that's fine.
Because it's Gregory.
Right. Well, no, it's just Craig.
No, but I'm saying in Spanish, Gregorio.
No, I know. I follow where they were going.
Yes.
But my name is not short for Greg.
What is the origin of the name Craig?
It means rock.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Craig, like a Craig.
Rock.
Like
I think it's Italian, too, actually, in origin originally. Oh. Or maybe Swedish.
Like Latin?
I don't know.
Hmm.
It's not Latin.
It's not Latin?
No.
Okay.
I don't know.
If it was, if its origins were in Italian.
Right, then it has to be Latin, yeah. It makes sense.
I'm not making, Latin. I'm not...
You know, it makes sense. What you're saying makes sense. I'm saying stuff I don't know the answer to.
Mine is a Latin, Patricia.
Oh, is it?
It's a Patricia. Yes, it's a you know, the nobility.
Oh, nice.
Because people can tell.
You're very noble.
Very.
And I'm kind of like a rock.
I'm not noble. I'm of the nobility.
Oh, that's, nice.
I believe it.
Even better.
No, not because it doesn't carry on. It's not like everyone named Patricia then gets to be part of the nobility.
Right. They don't like cut you a check.
No, it doesn't happen. I live in the, I've lived in apartments most of my life. Actually, I live in an apartment now. We live in a house that has two apartments. And I don't envy anybody who has to try to live with a new landlord. But I really don't envy a woman who lives in Wrigleyville because she discovered that there is a camera hidden in her apartment. Is this in her bedroom?
Yeah, it was in her bedroom. She found the camera in a vent in her bedroom. And she doesn't know who put it there,
right.
Of course. It could be the landlord, as you've pointed out. It could have been someone else.
Could have been a boyfriend.
Right. But right. For some reason, she one day noticed something weird and, you know, they're still investigating who put it there.
Wow.
But that's disturbing.
It's in a ceiling vent. And
yeah.
Right. Because has it been there just whatever?
Right.
Someone else was spying on?
Yeah. Finding a camera in a personal place like a bathroom or a bedroom or anything, that's mm-hmm. confusing. The
right.
minute that happens, you don't know how long it's been there, what they've already taken off of the video. And with the internet now, you can put that video anywhere. So
right. And what if, like, the people that were living there before were being investigated, and that's why there was equipment there? Like, somebody, you know, like, law
intriguing.
Enforcement.
Intriguing, yeah. So it could be a long time that
right.
that's been up there.
And then people think that it's still her, and so she gets attacked by international criminals who...
Right, because they were spies
they mistake
that
her.
Were living in right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This all makes sense now.
That's a little bit.
Probably Russian spies.
Or they want to see, or someone wants to see her in her panties.
Yeah, or that.
Yeah,
that,
that's probably the one. And actually, and along with the story of the hidden camera, this is will not be so hidden camera. Chicago police are going to start using a body camera program, which a lot of people have been calling for this year. And I think not just this year, but they have in general. Because there was legend. Yes?
I got a text message from the 219. It's very short and sweet. Craig is Scottish. Know your name facts.
Oh, ah.
Thank you, 219.
Kurt. I would say that not his
that
name
is
isn't Kurt. That's
right. I don't know what his name is. Maybe it's also Craig, but apparently it's Scottish. As I did Google that after saying on air that I knew stuff I didn't. And yeah, you're right.
Did you know that? Are you of Scottish origin?
No, I'm Italian and a bunch of other places.
Okay.
Yeah.
But Craig is a, well, that's interesting. That someone that your family would give you a Scottish.
I'm actually named after the hockey goalie for the U.S. team, Roger Craig, who essentially won an Olympic gold medal in 1980.
Is he Scottish?
I don't think so.
I'm just kidding. I love that. I've never known that about.
Yeah,
your
that's
name.
What I'm named after is the goalie.
I love that
the miracle.
Are your family
80 or 84? I don't know what year that happened.
Family.
Please don't correct me with that text messages.
Yes.
Sometime in the 80s.
We're ballparking it.
Yeah,
about hockey
ish.
Family members who are fans of hockey?
Well, I think my father was just a big fan of that, you know,
oh,
the miracle
of,
on ice.
Right.
And so that's where the name came from.
All right.
Yeah.
I like that. Mine is my mom was learning English, and that was a name she could pronounce, was Patricia.
Right. And actually, I think I said the wrong name. It's like Jimmy Craig or something. Roger Craig was a San Francisco 49ers running back that I'm also kind of named after.
All right.
Yeah, apparently a lot of people that were famous in the 80s had the last name of Craig.
Oh.
Like famous athletes. I don't know why. I mean, that's, you know. They just all went by the name Craig. And maybe if I switched it to my last name, I would be a famous athlete right now.
Oh, Collins Craig? Colin Craig. I like that.
Colin Craig. That could work.
Colin Craig could work.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I could be like a wrestler.
You are a work in progress.
Well, thank you.
You just switch
I'm still working
around.
On it, yeah.
That's why it's a work in progress. So the Chicago police, they're going to start a body camera pilot program. And there's a lot of cities across the country that are planning to launch this program. They will be wearing some cameras clipped to the officer's clothing, while others will have them clipped to glasses, goggles, or headgear. That's interesting. Do you see a cop coming with, you know, got cameras right here on the sides? Talk right into the, what, you know, that, I guess. Wow. This is going to get all very strange. The program is not a surprise.
Essentially, they're going to be just wearing cameras. Just the whole outfit is made of all cameras.
From every angle?
Right. Every possible conceivable angle. It's like the people who do those video game captions, shoot, like stop motion capture, whatever it is. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, it's just going to be police officers wearing all that kind of stuff.
And that sounds affordable, too.
It does. I think it's really affordable.
Really practical.
Maybe we could just turn police officers into robots.
They're only, I think that they made a movie about that. I don't think it turned out well for Detroit.
No.
A total of 30 cameras will be tested during the initial pilot program. It's obviously not a surprise in the wake of a shooting of an unarmed 18-year-old African-American in Ferguson, Missouri last August. They're planning to have this program started by September. No, it was announced in September. It doesn't say when this is going to start, so it's going to be surprise, surprise. Either your cop, your responding police officer will have a camera or he won't. I wonder, I think there are obviously, you know, minuses and pluses to having the camera on. Does it affect the way, are they, because, you know, when I'm on camera, I, like here, I'm trying to, you know, do
you,
things.
You change your way that you behave. I don't know. I think it's just good.
You know,
I think that having cameras in situations like that demonstrate facts.
Right.
And at a time when we probably need facts.
So the camera's just running all the time. I wonder how much is captured and saved.
I mean,
just dump it out after a certain number of hours?
That's a good question. When you ever see someone, you know, or hear about a story where someone gets arrested and we're not really sure what the facts are, but then you have that camera from the car and you can see some of the events, that seems to make me feel a little bit better, a little bit safer. Not that I distrust anyone, but just you can know, you know, exactly what happened from seeing the video.
What's not in this article is whether or not there's also audio. Is it strictly picture-based?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know.
Is it strictly video?
Right, because then you got to have, like, microphones and stuff on you, too.
Right, because who knows what, you know, what if the perp says, I'm going to shoot you? Whether or not they reach for a gun, they make the threat. Although I would think that, right, are we doing everything off of body motion?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it sounds really complicated to make sure that you're getting the right shot into you, and that might affect officers and their ability to defend themselves if they're also making sure that the camera
say,
is on the
say person. It right into the camera. Right. What was that? What did you say? Wait, look into the camera.
Before we get any further here,
I wouldn't need
just
you to speak.
Do all the things you did again into my face.
Directly into the... Right. That's the thing, is that then the police officer has to make sure that he's looking in the right place for the camera to pick up the
Yeah, you get pushed
image.
Over. You don't know what happened.
Right.
Oh, now I'm confused.
It's very complicated.
This is super complicated.
It is. Well, 30 police officers starting this year will have body cameras. More after this on 720 WGN. You know what we meant to get to? Oh, there's something. There was something we were going to.
We didn't have time for it. We didn't have time to talk about it. It did not make the show. It had to go. Maybe next time. I don't know. This is the end of the show. We gotta go, the end of the show. Go slow.
Well, the elevator's gone to the basement. We'll have to wait for it to come back up to bring producer Craig Collins back. And we did receive a text from our listener in Italy who says that we have gotten the pronunciation correct. And but he didn't tell me if it was Italian Dave or Davide. And we're happy to hear from you, Davide, and have a great day at work. And we thank you for listening. And we apologize for any grammatical inaccuracies that you pick up along the way because of the way we speak Chicago English. Over by there. It's over by there. We're saying there because sometimes we...
Just call the guy Dave already and let's get over it, Dave.
Italian
Dave.
Dave. We were talking about the body cameras. The pilot program is starting this year for the Chicago Police Department, starting with about 30 cameras. And before we get to the things we meant to get to, let's get to Ray. Hi, Ray.
Hey, Teddy. How about, you know, like Ghostbusters? You have these crews running around, and when there's something going down, you know, you got a producer, a director, lighting, makeup. You know, cut, not, let's back everything up. It's not working.
Right,
you
know, right. Yeah.
Let's do a retake. Come on.
Right. That wasn't the angle we wanted. We need a beggar, you know, get in there with the boom mic.
This really wasn't the money shot. Can we do this all over again? Get him back up.
Yeah, yeah. And please don't act. Just be yourself.
Just be yourself. Yes. Just act. Just, what would you do in this situation? What's your motivation in this moment?
Yeah, and who's doing lunch? Who's bringing the food?
Right.
The coffee.
Where's okay. Yeah, break for Craft Table. Craft Services is here. It's time. See ya, cut. That's a wrap.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks, Ray. Bye. Appreciate that. Have a good morning. Talk to you later. Joining us in the studio, Nick DiGilio is here. And there's so much we didn't get to, but we'll have to get to it later, I think. Because next year, can we interest you in a pastry?
No.
All right, then. That's really all I was wondering about. It's a good win tonight with the Blackhawks.
Great win.
Yeah, very fun. Were they playing? Were they home?
Yes.
Excellent. See, now, when's the next game you're going to?
Next game I'm going to?
Yes. Do you know when you'll have time to go again? Because I know...
Probably. Well, I mean, the All-Star break is coming up, so it's not. It's going to be for...
It's going to be a bit.
A few days.
I should probably... I have still not ever gone to a Hawks game. You'd think that working here, I now have. I just forget to ask.
Yeah.
I just don't... I don't know. I'm not good at taking advantage of you know, the perks.
I got a really good connection.
Do you?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I believe
I go
you.
To a lot of games.
I know you do.
Yeah.
I've never been. Did you see that story about the young woman who has been blind?
Yeah.
And she her dream was to go to a game. And you have to imagine that it's, you know, we think, well, she can't see anything, but I'm guessing the sounds and the feel of being there have got to be just wonderful. You know.
Sure.
Yeah, it affects you on different sensory levels. Just saying.
So, yeah,
it's a great story. And
whenever the Blackhawks score a goal, the place goes crazy.
Well, you know why? Plus, they have the best horn.
They have the best horn.
They have the best horn in all of hockey.
For sure.
I love that that was like some sort of criteria. They actually chose the Blackhawks.
No, it wasn't the horn. It was the horn and the song.
Was it both? I thought
it was
just
Chelsea
the horn.
Dagger. It was the best goal celebration was number one because of the horn and Chelsea Dagger.
Oh, I didn't know it was both.
There is also a website that seems to believe that they have the best horn by itself, and then you can listen to all the different teams' horns.
Oh, okay.
And decide that the Chicago Blackhawks may indeed have the best one.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, as long as it's followed by Chelsea Dagger.
Agreed. We've been doing stair climbing in the on various days. Craig and I are going to be working out tonight at the doghouse, and I don't know if I'm ready for it. Has there ever been a workout that you've enjoyed at all?
No, I never work out. I'm not going to do that.
I'm not asking you to. There's never been a time in your life.
No.
When you've all right.
Just no, I don't work out. Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not. I'm not.
No.
I'm not
when
saying...
I was in high school, I was on cross country for a little while.
That's something.
That was 35 years ago.
But it's in there somewhere, Nick. No, did you enjoy cross country? Because for me, like running that, I couldn't do it.
I didn't enjoy cross country.
Right. What made you join the cross country team?
Because I was going to a high school that I didn't know,
mm-hmm.
where none of my friends, my parents were like, you're not going to go to Lane. You're not going to go to Lakeview
mm-hmm.
because all of your burnout, pothead, moron friends are going there
mm-hmm.
and you're getting away from them.
Right.
So
I'm sure there were no potheads at Luther North.
Well, it worked.
It did.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, because the ones that you were used to being around, but I'm guessing there was a population.
Of course there were potheads right. at Luther North.
But not the ones that you
hung out
with.
Not the ones that I hung out with
right.
and were a bad influence on me.
Okay.
So when I got there, I got there in August mm-hmm. to tour the school and take a look at it to see if I liked it. And I thought, and my parents also thought, we talked about it, that it would be a good move if I joined cross country because it starts in August.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time school started in September, I'd be familiar with the school and I'd have already made friends.
That's a great plan.
So I quit cross country about halfway through the season.
Did you make friends though?
Yeah, I did. So it was accomplished. I didn't need to run anymore.
Right. I've succeeded.
Now, when I was a kid, I played a lot of baseball and I played hockey and stuff like that, and all the way up through my 20s. But then it was just like, all right, I'm done with this.
Well,
and when I hit my 40s,
mm-hmm.
when I hit my actually probably mid 30s, it was all over.
It was all
like I'm tired of this.
I'm not interested in doing
anything but getting up, getting a beer, and sitting down.
I feel that's, like doing yoga it. With you sometime. Just I think
no.
that,
no. My ex-wife did that hot yoga crap.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm not into that.
She would come home completely flushed with a bag full of wet clothes.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like fun.
She loves it.
Oh, yeah. Some people love it. They feel it's meditative.
She
know,
loves it,
spiritual.
Man. She still does it. She lives in Oregon. Of course, they've got like probably 80,000 places in Oregon where you can do that crap
because
mm-hmm. it's Oregon.
Right. They like to sweat all the toxins
well, they
out
do all that weird crap in Oregon.
I don't know. I've never been. I've never been to Oregon. It's one of the few states I haven't been. They have always have these, you know, BuzzFeed or all these quizzes like how many states have you been
to? You've
not
been to Portland?
I've never been to Portland.
It's weird.
Really? I've heard from the show Portlandia and according to Maria Bamford, she's got great material about Portland.
Portland is weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you been there several times?
I've been there twice.
That was enough?
And it was enough.
It was enough.
No, I liked it, but yeah. It's weird. I wouldn't live there.
I'm trying to think of any place that I've been that was just like, you know, I've
been to Austin?
I have never been to Austin.
Weird.
Okay. Oh, is it a little bit like a Madison, but in Texas? Madison, Wisconsin?
Weirder.
Weirder?
Yeah.
Because Madison's got its moments.
Well, Madison is drinking. I mean, Madison is all about getting drunk.
Well, and Austin's not about getting drunk?
Kind of, but yeah. Not so much.
And artsy.
It's more about music and art.
Right.
Weird music and art.
Okay. I have to go down there.
Like, Madison, you just go up and get bombed.
Well, I wonder what made at Austin, Texas, sort of the center. I mean, I'm guessing there's a lot of, you know, conservative, you know, groups there too. But it's a very, it seems like a very artistic community.
It's the, I think it's the coolest city in Texas.
Oh, that's what I've heard.
Yeah,
because Houston is a strange place. It's, you know, yeah, it's a very strange, and not in the same way we're talking about. It's just,
no,
it's a friendly southern town, but it's a little bit rougher on the edges.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah,
I've never. The only places I've ever thought I would like to live if I had to have, like, let's say two homes. I think Nashville, where Spike Odell lives.
Nashville's great.
It is.
New Orleans would be my choice.
I've never been. That's another place. I know. I know. Awesome. Jen Bosworth's stories were great too.
Awesome. New Orleans is awesome.
What do you have coming up on your show?
We got some live music with musician, singer-songwriter David Hayes is going to be live. And we are going to analyze State of the Union address with a political professor from USC.
Excellent. We were talking about how it's amazing that everyone really has the same mechanism for listening and completely different organizational skills when it comes to understanding.
Well, it depends on what side of the fence.
It does, but I mean, like, it's
everybody hears the same thing, Patty.
They do, but they're like, man, that visceral reaction.
Well, you got to do that.
I don't know if you have. I mean, I was saying earlier, I just wish that we could all, like, come at it and go, I'm going to listen to what the President of the United States has to say. And
never going to happen in the history of this world.
I mean, like, even if just, like, tone down the...
Never going to happen.
Just tone down the absolute acceptance and the absolute hatred.
No.
I've just tone it down.
It's not going to happen.
Can't I hope? Can I aspire?
It's just like people climbing on the horses out there. When you were getting upset about that, it's a waste of time.
It's a waste of time.
Absolute waste
of time. But it's my waste of time.
I understand.
I know.
But it's never going to change.
I'm a little...
Don't get upset about it.
Right. Well, I'm not going to change. I'm going to keep hoping.
Because it's a waste of time to get upset about it.
Exactly.
It's just you accept it.
Oh, it's fun to get
upset. This sucks.
Yes.
But I accept it.
All right. You accept it, and I hope for more.
I'm done hoping.
From people. I hope for more. I'll do some yoga with me. Maybe we'll find some hope.
Yeah,
there.
That'll happen.
Maybe a little downward facing dog will re-inspire you.
Get some snow cones in hell when that happens.
Nick DiGilio is up next. Thank you so much, Bill Cerones. And Craig will do this again tomorrow. We have a political cartoonist, Scott Stantis from the Chicago Tribune, will be joining us. And Elliot Serrano, who will be doing some stairs with us. We'll let you know how it went at Doghouse CrossFit.